the line of the poem says, at its most abundant. And that made me think of Ratnasambhava, you know, the jewel-born one. So it's not only Padmasambhava, but Ratnasambhava. Generosity. A softer, a more opening, a more abundant giving out. Yeah. So that energy is focused, but it's also moving outwards. It's constantly moving outwards. There's nothing interned about this energy at its most abundant. And of course, that's very much the central practice of working in Windhorse, of working in evolution. You know, it is very much a practice of generosity. It's a practice which allows other things to happen. It's a practice which fuels other practices. I went to the pictures last night, actually, and there's this advert, which I had never seen before, for Barclays Bank with Samuel L. Jackson, if you've seen it, and he's saying, money ain't evil. It's a bit weird because it's an advert for Barclays Bank. But if you forget that it's for Barclays Bank, we could use it as an advert. I thought it'd be quite good for Windhorse, you know. Money isn't evil. Money's just what you do with it, you know. So that's what we're doing. We're generating something which is not going to Barclays Bank. It's going to create the movement. It's going to create the new society. And Ratnasambhava is also present in the poem. You know, we're told by the Windhorse that he's the four horses that carry the jewel-born Buddha of the South, yeah? So we have a lotus-born and we have a jewel-born. So we have a jewel and a lotus. We have another bodhisattva. We have Avalokiteshvara. And Avalokiteshvara, as we know, is the symbol of the order. Thousand-armed Avalokiteshvara. It's a little fact for those of you that like statistics. If nobody's died or resigned since Saturday, there are 997 members of the Western Buddhist Order. Three to go. So it will almost certainly happen in Tuscany. Somebody in Tuscany will be the thousandth hand of Avalokiteshvara. But that's not the end of the story, because a thousand is only symbolic. It's really infinite. So we've got way to go. A way to go. But he's that archetypal bodhisattva. He's the archetypal bodhisattva. He's volition, will at its highest, because he's the volition, the will of bodhicitta. And that's the gift that the Windhorse bears. That's the jewel. The three jewels are one jewel. They're the jewel of the bodhicitta that he carries on his back. And that's the gift that Bhante has given us. That's the gift that we have available to us. The movement that we have, the new society that we're creating, is Bhante's gift. He says himself that the movement is his work, the work of his life, his main work of his life. And it is his bodhisattva work. When in this trip that I talked about before in the States in 94, I gave a talk on the occasion of Karuna Devi and Saramati's ordinations. There were three talks. Manjavaja talked about the importance of these ordinations for the United States. I talked about the importance of ordination for the world. And Subhuti, of course, talked about the importance of ordination for the cosmos. I was all right with the world. It was quite funny being sandwiched between the two of them, actually. But anyway, in this talk I was talking about the private ordination ceremony. In fact, it came back to me just last week, strangely enough. And I was saying how, in a way, what we're doing with that is very much on our own level what Shantideva's doing in the Bodhicharya Avatara, when he says, today my life has borne fruit, no? And he talks very much about being born into the Buddhist family and acting in a way that will not stain this family. And in a sense, that's what the ordination is. It's being born into a family, unfortunately a not perfect family, but a family which is geared towards creating the conditions for that to happen. And I said in this talk that I'd felt very much that in a way being ordained for me was very much saying to Bhante, I want to help you in your bodhisattva work. And it was quite interesting, didn't it, because he was sitting there, because he'd introduced the speakers. And I felt a bit risky actually saying that, because I thought it could sound a bit, you know, kind of, I don't know, something. Anyway, I said it because I believe it, and he was sitting there nodding, which was quite satisfying, really. And in a way, I felt, well, yes, it is. You know, it is his bodhisattva work. It's the outpouring of his bodhisattva heart. That's the opportunity we've got, yeah? So I'd like to, just before finishing, read from my relation to the order. When Bhante's talking about forming the order, setting up the order, so he says, when I look back on those early days and think of the difficulties I had to experience, not that I always thought of them as difficulties. I cannot but feel that the coming into existence of the Western Buddhist Order was little short of a miracle. Not only did the lotus bloom from the mud, it had to bloom from the mud contained within a small and inadequate pot. Perhaps it had to bloom just then or not at all, and perhaps this particular pot, which he's talking about himself, was the only one available. Now hundreds of lotuses are blooming, nearly 1,000. Some of the bigger and more resplendent flowers being surrounded by clusters of half-opened buds. During the last 22 years, because it was on the 22nd anniversary of the order that he gave this talk, during the last 22 years, a whole lotus lake has come into existence, or rather, a whole series of lotus lakes. Alternatively, the original lotus plant has grown into an enormous lotus tree, not unlike the great four-branched refuge tree. In fact, a whole forest of lotus trees. Contemplating the series of lotus lakes, contemplating the forest of lotus trees, and rejoicing in the strength and beauty of the flowers, I find it difficult to believe that they really did all originate from that small, inadequate pot, which some people wanted to smash to bits, or cast into the dustbin, or bury as deep as possible. In brief, dropping the metaphor and speaking plainly, when I see what a great and glorious achievement the order represents, despite its manifest imperfections, I find it difficult to believe that I could have been its founder. I spoke of my having taken upon myself the onerous responsibility of founding the Western Buddhist Order. I indeed took that responsibility upon myself, and it was indeed an onerous one. Nevertheless, there are times when, far from feeling that it was I who took on the responsibility, I feel it was the responsibility that took on me. There are times when I am dimly aware of a vast, overshadowing consciousness that has, through me, founded the order and set in motion our whole movement.